Hi everyone, welcome to Ask Margot. I'm Margot de Coatsworth and I am a clinical hypnotherapist, a certified rapid transformational therapy practitioner and coach, a member of the International Institute of Complementary Therapists, a certified trauma-informed coach, and a member of the accredited counsellors, coaches, psychotherapists and hypnotherapists. So that's my professional persona. I'm very interested in how we make a success of life, our relationship with ourselves and with others, our health and our weight, and many other things. I think success in any of our endeavours comes from the inside out rather than the other way. We need to have subconscious thinking that works with us in achieving what we want and not against us. We need to make sure the story we tell to and about ourselves is what we want, so that our inner and outer chat is not working in conflict with what we want. Then we're properly set up for success in whatever it is we're seeking in life. Today, I'd like to talk about Coast Access Radio and what an amazing job they do. This station is run as a charity, so that's always a challenge for those in charge, isn't it? Rent and all the overheads must be met. And, of course, the really quite spectacular core working staff must be paid for the show to go on. Then there are the many highly qualified and experienced people volunteering here who contribute enormously to the success of the station. I continue to meet people who have had amazing careers and they're here volunteering their time and knowledge. I came here because I'd done an interview with Coast once, so I'd already had a happy experience with the station. I'm a writer and I had said to a woman in England I was working with, who's a PR whiz, that I wanted to write a column, a kind of agony aunt, which is a pretty terrible term, a Dear Abby column. Then I had the thought that perhaps it could be a radio show, and I put the idea to Coast. Well, the rest is history, and I come in every 2 weeks. It's really the grooviest place to come to work. I'm always greeted with animation and positivity. Well, I also do bring cake, so that may be why they like me here. I don't think I've ever worked in a place quite like this. Those who work and volunteer here really, truly have a heart for what they do. They are consistently fixed on doing the best job possible. I'm kind of dazzled by it. Anyway, once upon a time, people wrote checks to support their local community radio, whose philosophy, by the way, is about the people, for the people, and by the people, or words to that effect. I think that's very cool. You couldn't really get a more lofty reason for doing something. This station needs our support and sponsorship. Did you know that you could sponsor a show here? It's not expensive. If you want to, please do contact admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz to make inquiries or think about a one-off donation. Sometimes we feel an urge to do these kinds of things. Well, that's your intuition talking to you. So say yes and do it. Or you can leave an entire legacy to ensure the rich offering that Coast presents to the people of this community and beyond continues and flourishes. I've often asked myself, what is a worthy pursuit? I'm mad about colour and food and interiors as well as my therapy, and there are many who focus on fashion or music or arts. I don't know that any one thing is more worthy than another. Is a pursuit to save animals more lofty than showing someone how to dress? If it enriches people's lives and brings joy to the world, then it's worthy, surely. Coast enriches lives, and that's a pretty worthy cause. When I thought I'd like to talk about this on the radio, I wasn't sure if it was within the party rules because we don't sell or promote within our shows, but I figure this is for the cause, and if I just say it without getting sign-off, then I might sneak it through. Just because something is free, it doesn't mean it isn't incredibly valuable. On that note, my business is now going to sponsor my own show. Every time I think about that, it makes me smile, and I have this picture in my mind of a person standing on the stage, introducing the next amazing act with a drum roll. Then instead of the next act coming on, they just do a twirl of their cape, toss it off, and they are the next act. So, without further ado, I bring you Margot de Coatsworth of Margot Unlimited. Ta-da! Oh, it's just me again. I'm not sure why I find that so entertaining. But now, on to more serious matters and our first question for the day. We're going to talk about feeding a toddler. I have many babies in my family, and there are often questions about how to manage various aspects of babydom. A recent one, which many of you will have had experience with, is feeding a toddler. One of my family, Edward, was so exasperated by how much time was spent cajoling, encouraging, and tricking this baby into eating what he thought the baby really needed for its health and growth that he felt he was going mad. I just recall the choo-choo train going into the tunnel from my background and other nonsense that we practiced on an all too frequent basis to try and get our small people to eat their food. I think we know now that it did us absolutely no good to be told we had to finish everything on our plates before we could leave the table. Do you remember that? Is it still ingrained in your subconscious? And is that a contributing factor to eating more than you need or want as an adult? I think so. I hear the word ringing in my ears, willful waste bringeth woeful want. That went around in my family. That explains a lot. I never throw anything out that has life still left in it. So now I think we're a bit more enlightened, and we know that force feeding is a no-go. Thank God we are programmed to eat when we are hungry and to stop when we are satisfied. Notice I didn't say stop when we are full, and that's because if we eat quickly, then by the time our body registers we've had enough, we've usually overdone it and are overfull. So no more of that. There is a school of thought that says we must chew until all the food is broken down completely in our mouth before we swallow. Well, I've tried that, and I can say that if I had to do that, I would have had enough after three mouthfuls and just want to leave the table. It would take hours to eat dinner, but there's a weight loss method we could consider. But I'm going off topic now. We must get back to the baby question, which is how to get your toddler to eat. As a parent, your role is to choose what you offer your child to eat, where they eat it, and when they eat. That's your job, the beginning and end of it. Their job is to eat as much of it as they want, if they want, period. So this is a kind of a new school of thought for me and many of my generation, but it came from a course that I've been introduced to and have read just recently. We never knew it, but it does make perfect sense. Three meals, two to three snacks of good balanced food. You offer it to the child and they decide whether or not they'll eat it. How wonderfully liberating not to have to steel yourself for another mealtime battle of making sure they don't faint from hunger and malnutrition. They aren't going to. If they don't want to eat, you say, "That's okay, sweetie. Snack time is later. If you can wait, that's when we're next eating." And you make them wait. You don't say, "Oh, well, darling, if you don't want your proper dinner, you can have a peanut butter sandwich." I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. No, they're just little hatchlings. You are the boss. This very informative course I did also talks about not demonizing sugar so that it becomes something they feel they must pursue or sneak. It even suggests you let them have the experience of overdoing it so they learn to realize that not managing that will make them feel sick. Then they can have some sugar. That's life after all. It's going to be around. But it's not taboo or unrealistically restricted. So that they end up with, hopefully, a balanced relationship to sweet things. As an adult, I like to think I can eat anything. But I often will have just a taste or a slither of something. Because it's about the experience and not about quantity. That may not apply to everything in life, but it does work for food. If food is an issue for you, step one is just to decrease the size of your servings. It works like magic and you don't feel deprived because you're still participating with everything that's on offer. If you don't plan to burn off a big helping, then your body doesn't want it and you know what it will do with it. It will store it up for later. And we live in a country of plenty, so we don't need to store it up for a rainy day. If you want the details of this toddler eating course, get in touch with me and I'll send them to you. You can use the contact tab at margotunlimited.com, which is where we invite you to send in your questions as well. Margot has a T in it. Or, of course, you can send your questions to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz. I must add a little proviso here. I have just tried to feed a toddler who had flown across the world, and I confess that I did have to resort to distraction and a little trickery to get her to eat anything. Jet lag was causing some sort of hunger strike, so maybe the mothers did know best. Okay, our next question today is about a conversation I had recently with Eduardo, and he was talking about Maslow's hierarchy of needs as though it was the last word of what we're all about. I didn't agree, so I'm sure he asked me the question as to why I didn't, and here's my answer. Maslow maintained that we must satisfy lower level needs such as food and shelter before moving on to higher ones. His five levels are physiological, safety, love and belonging, esteem, and self-actualization. That's the last one. Let's look more closely at this concept of what we've been told and happily accepted without question. So it seems. We must stop doing that for starters. Let's look at everything and question whether we should just accept it as truth because we've been told to. Perhaps there is more to be discovered. Self-actualization, I looked up, is defined as a concept regarding the process by which an individual reaches his or her full potential. So clearly, this is a process and not a state because we have unlimited potential. We will never fully tick this one off. In my humble opinion, we must scoop this one into Maslow's number four on the list, which is esteem. I define it thus and shoot it up to number one on my list. Our sense of self, knowing our value, comes first because without that, let's face it, we might be alive, but we don't really live well. I think our sense of self is absolutely fundamental to how we do everything in life. That's where our power comes from. It's what governs everything, intuition, insight, empathy, all the things that give us an edge in life. Number two, love and belonging. We need this, but our sense of self-love is of greater importance and is necessary if we are to have successful love and belonging with others. If you don't love yourself, how will you love anyone else? Maslow's next one is safety. I guess this is all about lions and tigers and gangs and mafia. I don't know why this is one of our top five. Safe from floods and fire and famine, predators of all kinds. People say drive safe, which is terrible English anyway. It should be drive safely. I don't like to be told that, as it plants a suggestion of the opposite, a suggestion of danger and fear. Just say, have a fun trip. Or, as I used to say to my husband, watch out for blondes because they're everywhere. I think Maslow perhaps needed to address fear-mongering, worry, hand-wringing, and looking for the worst case scenario as we do seem to get so caught up in what might go wrong. I would delete safety. I think it's obvious, but I don't really think it's right for this list. So, next is our physical needs. Maslow's number five. I propose a new approach to this, and therefore a new expectation. Let's get our sense of self right as number one. That's what makes us the spectacular beings we're designed to be. That's what puts us above animals. We will then be aware of who we really are and what we are capable of. We'll be caring for our fellow man and our planet. It will direct every aspect of our lives. This will flow on naturally to love and belonging because when you get that number one right, people are drawn to you and we'll automatically feel safe. That's number two. And that, my fellow man, would allow us to happily focus on number three, our physical needs, both for ourselves and each other. You may think you might be hungry and wet and homeless while you're sorting your needs about self and your love and belonging, but this Change doesn't take time. It's about intention. And it just takes a moment of realization and commitment. Then you can get on with building your hut and hunting for dinner. I guess for me, there are two important points here. One is that we should think things through and not just accept them because that's what someone else has decided or deduced. Because we don't know everything yet. The second is that we might make so much more success of life if we sorted out our inner stuff before we expect the outer stuff to fall into line. Food for thought, I hope. Our next question is about how to get the things you want to come to fruition. How to get your stuff to show up, or in today's speak, how to manifest. This question was asked by Elaine. She said she shied away from using the word manifest as it seemed so bandied about and a wee bit woo-woo. It also suggests material things to her. Nevertheless, she wanted an answer about how to get things to actually happen, to manifest. I agree, Elaine, about how people view the word manifestation. I have similar reservations about it, but let's put that aside and see how we can call in the things we want. Physical, material, emotional, spiritual, whatever it is. Let's see how we can get them to show up. I was listening recently to a man I have enormous regard and respect for. His insight is amazing, and though he no longer walks this planet, many people still benefit from his wisdom. His name is Neville Goddard, and he teaches about manifestation. So I thought we would look at his advice. Neville's formula for success is firstly and most importantly that you must live in the end. That's what he calls it, or from the end, meaning you must launch yourself into a place where you feel you are already living in the place you want to be. This can be a challenge. You don't live looking on and longing for it. You think and feel as though you have already attained it. That's key. Pop it into your imagination and stay there. Number two, he says, cultivate faith. One definition of faith is that you already have what you want. I call it the unseen. This is the biblical approach as well. Ask and believe because it's already yours. Number three on Neville's list is express gratitude. That's self-explanatory and has a basis of success in the way we can draw more good to ourselves. Say thank you. What do we do when we've received something? We say thank you. Thank you helps put you in the place of feeling that you already have that thing. It's an easy and clever tool we can use. Thank you for that amazing job, that magnificent boyfriend, that fabulous wife, that appreciative child, that well-behaved dog. It's a principle that works on anything at all. Number four is revise. This is an interesting one and will probably be a bit new to some of you. And it can be a bit tricky to get your head around. Neville suggests revising anything you wish had gone differently. You didn't get the job. Revise the interview in your mind so that you did. You didn't have a great date. Revise the memory so that you did. Your application was unsuccessful. You didn't connect with the right person. You missed the bus. I don't know. Anything that you wish had been successful that wasn't, revise it. To me, this is not about changing the past, but about changing our perception and our future expectations. I think this is a matter of doing unseen work, or if you like, behind the scenes work. It's like imprinting success on your mind so that the next time it's different. When you go to bed, think through your day. If it doesn't please you, return to it and rerun it in your imagination so that it does. Then go to sleep with that success imprinted on your mind and your subconscious. If you have never heard anything like this before, what a good thing you're listening now. Just try it. You have nothing to lose. Do you see your dream mate, house, job, life slip away? Revise that and step into it by way of your amazing, powerful imagination. Then say thank you very much for it. When you sleep, whatever your last thoughts are, they slide into your subconscious. So that's a really important time. Number five, and the last thing on Neville's list, and for many others, is letting go. Our job is to request what we want of life. Have faith, be grateful, live from the end, revise as required, and then we must detach. Because in feeling grabby, grasping, pushy, and even desperate, we energetically repel rather than attract. We used to say, let go and let God. That's really what this last point is about. To sum it up, let's put it this way. You can't have what you don't resonate with. Here's an easy way of getting your head around the idea of resonance and frequency regarding this. Think of a radio. You can't pick up a frequency if your radio is not tuned into that. It's that simple. It's a law of life. If something or someone discordant shows up in my life, I ask myself, where has that thing found resonance in me? It's always an interesting question to ask yourself. Here's an example. If a girl is attracting boys who do not respect her and treat her well, our first reaction might be, oh, poor thing, that something like that should happen to her. But really, our question should be, is that happening because she doesn't think she's worth better treatment? Is that lack of respect resonating with her lack of respect for herself? I don't see it as a judgy thing at all. Knowledge is good, and if we know why something is happening, then we know we can do something about it. In this case, she would move out of that situation and do the sorting work on herself, because every single one of us is worthy of the highest respect, both from ourselves and from others. Accept nothing less. Not now, not ever, never. I hope that's clear enough, Elaine. If you need that in writing, you can always email me and I'll send you that list of Neville Goddard's. The other thing is, I like to remind myself that we do not and cannot have knowledge of the whole master plan of everything in life, of the world or of others. We can only see our part. So that, I guess, comes back to faith. I hope that's helpful. Our last question today is from Ella. You will note that all our questions and radio names are brought to you by the letter E. We never use real names, of course. She said she sometimes feels she's swimming upstream with people she talks to who don't turn out to be very emotionally mature. She wants to know how to spot that right off the bat so she isn't caught out by how people react and deal with situations poorly. What an interesting question, Ella. I thought this would be a short and sweet answer, but then when I look at it a bit further, it seems not. I'm afraid we will all know someone who will fit with the following attributes I'm going to bring to your attention. We may even see a few character flaws in ourselves. Emotional maturity can show up in lots of ways. There are some key signs to watch for, and I'm going to put these to you as a question so that we can all check in on ourselves. Number one is poor emotional regulation. Do you overreact to small issues? Do you struggle to handle criticism or setbacks? Do you shut down or withdraw instead of discussing problems? Do you blame others for mistakes? Do you make excuses instead of learning from situations? Do you avoid responsibility in relationships or work? Do you struggle to express emotions clearly? Do you use passive-aggressive behavior? Do you avoid serious conversations or deflect with jokes? Do you dismiss or minimize other people's feelings? Do you not try to see things from another person's point of view? Do you prioritize your needs over others consistently? Do you avoid making decisions or commitments? Procrastinate? Expect others to step in for you? Do you feel like a victim and they are always being wronged? Do you see people as all good or all bad? do you have difficulty keeping stable, harmonious relationships? Do you overact quickly and push people away? Well, that's a bit depressing. When I first thought about this, I was just going to say three things. One was, do you react impulsively and argue too easily? Do you take things personally? And do you kick back by deflecting to the other person? I'm sure we all have times when we drop the ball in some of those areas of interacting with others. It's good to be aware, though. In the past, I've often smoothed over things in my head or put my head in the sand and let poor behaviour go unchecked. But we shouldn't accept that for ourselves. There is a woman whose name is Mavina Anglay, who has some very no-nonsense advice, and this kind of sums up what we're talking about. She says, a ship is designed to take you places. So if your friendship, your relationship, your partnership, your courtship, your companionship, your fellowship, your stewardship, your worship, your leadership aren't taking you anywhere, then honey, you need to abandon ship. I think she might be right. Let's finish today with our usual invitation to send your questions into admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me under the contact tab at margotunlimited.com. I thought with our talk about manifesting that I would seek a message from the universe on that topic, and this is what I received. So here is our message, the word for today. I love it because it speaks of how we are designed to work together with God. I am all about manifesting. That is my method of creation after all. And you are my co-creators, not separate from me, but working with me, co-creating. Do you see? We are designed to work together in perfect harmony, rhythm, and yes, in perfect timing. Don't despair ever about timing. Just say to yourself, well, that'll be here in perfect time. And then let me do the work to make that so. I'm Margot Coatsworth, and this is Ask Margot. Thank you for your company today.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.